well, beautiful ones. This is Saturday. And you know how I love Saturday? Because we're here with our friends, sharing, committing to one another. It's just beautiful. And my favorite person of the hour, Richard Presser.
Good evening, Carolyn. Good evening, everyone.
Good evening, Richard. Thank you so much for being here and adding to our journey. And my dear friends, if you get our email, you know that tonight we are going to have Max. We're going to be speaking to the consciousness of the crystal skull. For those of you who are not familiar with our work, this might seem like the craziest thing you ever heard of. But for those who have heard about our work, you know that Richard teaches right brain magic and teaches people how to communicate with consciousness. And I must say, he does a great job of it. Everything in life has a consciousness. We're able to communicate with it. And the first time we started communicating to any great length, we were in a park, Richard and I, communicating with trees. That seems so long ago, doesn't it, Richard? Oh, I guess I'm not communicating with Richard. Richard, are you there? My goodness. Well, seems like Richard's got a problem that he's working on. So when we started communicating with a tree in the park, it was leaning over a stream, and I thought, my goodness, that tree's going to fall over into the stream. It was an old tree. And I started to hear words, thoughts. And the tree told me about the history surrounding the park. Talked about the mothers that bring their children, how much it enjoyed sharing time, watching the children play, watching the mothers taking care of their children. I've been in this area for a long time, and I'm a bit aware of the kind of rock because I live in a place where there is a lot of white rock. And the tree started talking about what was under the ground, the kind of rock that had crystal in it. Talked about how that particular area had a lot of water, was swampy at one time, off and on. Now we have like little streams that run through the area. And it talked about the history, the farming community that was there. And it was so intriguing, and I was a bit aware of the history of the place. So the information that I was getting from the consciousness of this tree, I knew was accurate. And that kind of got us started with what we call right brain magic, because what you're using is the right side of your brain to receive information, and the left side of the brain you are using to send out the questions. Really fascinating how to learn to use both sides of the brain to pass a question to another consciousness, receiving an answer. And I know it sounds kind of strange to be able to do this, but it is something we all know how to do. We did it very consciously in the ancient past. Consciousness knew how to talk to other consciousness. And that's what we do here on the radio show. And if you get our email, like I said, it is Max today. And so Richard seems to be finished with his technical difficulty. You just like attention, don't you?
I do. Little drama. Where's life without a little drama?
Yeah, but you're not supposed, males aren't supposed to be drama queens.
Well, I'll be a queen about it, just dramatic.
Okay, so, Richard, I know I'm connected to Max right now. Yeah. I would like for you to connect with Max. And for those people who are interested in feeling his consciousness, what you do is you see in your mind's eye what Max the Crystal Skull would look like, and you open up your heart center. You listen for what you are feeling and hearing, and you might feel and hear what Richard is receiving. So, Richard, be kind enough to connect to Max, and let's get this show moving.
I'm here. He's here. Where would you like to go?
Well, Max told me just recently he did have a little message that he wanted to give to people. So if you would take that message, I'd appreciate it.
I want to remind everyone that, as I said in a previous call with these two, that I carry the history of the Earth. Now, that might sound a little strange to you, but as I explained, indeed every crystal on the planet has that access. They all had that ability, and as I also mentioned previously, part of my mission was to, you might say, prompt them to record that memory, to hold that memory. And so that is available, and I track that, and I have it available. And part of what I did when I came to the planet was indeed to plug into that history, if you will, so that even though a lot of the, you might say, developmental history of the planet was well and truly complete by the time I arrived, because I came to the planet in geological terms pretty late in the scheme of things. As you are perhaps aware, I came during the time of Atlantis, and hence, from a geological perspective, the planet was quite old by then. And so I carry that history, and indeed any crystals that you might own have access to that history. And so if you have developed your skills to communicate with your crystal in the way that Richard is doing with me, either through trusting yourself and opening up those skills, or you have worked with Richard or Carolyn to develop these skills, then I encourage you to connect with your crystal and communicate with it in this manner, so that you too can call forth aspects of the true history of the planet and how events unfolded, rather than what you might say is the story that gets told to you in that so-called history that has been documented and taught to so many. So much has been distorted, you might say, by the process by which that information is gathered. There is a saying on your planet that history is told by the victor, and to a large degree that is true. So this information is available for any location on the planet and for the planet as a whole. And so I simply wanted to remind you of this, and also to understand that when we talk about the history of the planet, it also includes your personal history, the history of your past lives, in a sense. All of this history is recorded, and the linkages to your monad are in place. So those connections, if you will, give at least the history of the journeys on this planet. It is not that all of your entire monad's history is available, but you can connect, in a sense, with the understanding of when you have come to the planet previously through this history that is held within crystals. So I wanted to mention this, and to also mention that I am very excited by the opportunity that Carolyn and Richard have opened up for any of you to connect with me through the new service that they are setting up, and I will allow them a little later to share the story of this. But I am very excited by this new opportunity for you and for me, because in a sense, bringing forth this information for any of you that might ask for it in this way is to some extent addressing my mission, or an aspect of my mission, and that aspect relates to bringing forth the history of the earth. So I make that available, and I offered this to Carolyn and Richard, and they will talk to you a little more about this later. But I am very excited by this opportunity which is emerging, and I thank the two of them for putting this in place for me and for you.
That's beautiful, Max. Thank you. And I invite people out in the audience to send their question in as we begin. Max, you tell us that you were here for the beginning of Atlantis and through Atlantis. Can you give us some concept of why beings, shall we say, organized Atlantis? What was the purpose of starting that community?
It was intended that the experience of humanity upon the earth would, you might say, seek to bring forth a level of perfection, a level of ability, in a sense, that had not been expressed in a physical form before. There are, of course, many other physical expressions, if you will, that are humanoid or indeed take many other forms in the cosmos. But there were some special objectives for humanity when expressed in this dense form, a form quite different from that which existed in the time of Lemuria, which was much more etheric. The intention here was that, firstly, the human form would carry a much greater spectrum of emotional experience than any other beings in creation. And for this, you have very powerful emotional bodies that enable you to experience this extraordinary array of emotions. You do not understand, for the most part, that this is unique in creation, this depth and breadth of emotional experience, the highs and the lows that you experience in your human form are unique in creation. So this is one of the aspects. The second was the ability to create in the physical form with a freedom of expression and with a, you might say, granularity that is also unique in the creative sense. Some of you understand that quite an array of beings contributed to bringing forth the various forms of life upon the planet, the animals, the plants, the rocks, even the planet itself. And so, in a sense, there is an expression in creation to bring these things forth. But in that creation, the focus is not so much on bringing forth, for example, a specific flower or a specific tree or even a specific animal or a house or whatever it is that you desire to bring forth in your physical experience. Other beings do not carry that ability, which is, in a sense, implicit in the human form. Yes, to a large degree, it has been shut down as a result of the fall in Atlantis, in part because it opened too many doors to those who would, you might say, imprison humanity. And so much of this was shut down. But in the Atlantean experience, certainly the seeds of this were there. I say the seeds because the abilities that will come forth for humanity as events unfold will see the full realization of that ability to create in that very granular manner. To bring forth anything in your experience, a piece of fruit, a flower, an animal, whatever it is that you wish to bring forth in your experience, you will have, in a sense, complete control over your individual personal experience in a manner, again, that is unique in creation. So Atlantis was really created to bring forth these aspects of the human form in that experiment. So that is, in essence, the background to Atlantis.
That is beautiful. The people, or shall I say, the fingers of consciousness that the monads, the soul in its totality, sent to Atlantis, did they have a choice in coming to Atlantis?
Every soul has a choice about where they journey. In a sense, it is primarily a choice of the monad, but the finger of consciousness also participates in that choosing. So there is no obligation, though, of course, there is, in a sense, an expectation that a monad will pursue the path that it has chosen or to an extent been directed towards in its creation. So there is a choice, if you will, in the specifics, though each monad has some directives and then makes a choice within those parameters in terms of the directions that it will follow. And so it usually sends forth fingers of consciousness to pursue those directions, those specific directions. And unsurprisingly, when it is requested to send forth a finger of consciousness into a particular environment such as Atlantis, those requests are usually very closely aligned with whatever the primary focus directions are for that monad. So, in a sense, it is a cooperative process. So there is choice, but usually the choice that is made is in alignment with the request that is made to that monad and to that finger of consciousness.
Thank you so much. Would you agree or disagree that the monads have an area of
specialization? Is that the word?
Yeah. In other words, a special focus that they continuously work with.
Indeed, they do, and the degree of focus varies depending on the monad. This is very evident in the readings that you've been bringing forth in the Soul Origin and History series that you have been bringing forth for people. This specialization is very evident in quite a number of those readings. And this degree of specialization is much more common with the group that you are working with, which are the cherubim. You do see much more, you might say, specific focus in that particular group, whereas many other monads simply have a broader focus. For example, most of the monads that have sent forth most of humanity simply are following the direction to go forth and experience, to go forth and journey. And so there is a broader, you might say, agenda for those kinds of monads. So you do get this difference between the nature and focus of the monad, and hence how specific it might be in its particular specialization.
Thank you. When the fingers of consciousness came to Atlantis in the very beginning, did they remember? What memory came with them? Was it limited, or did they remember who they were and how they got there? Did they remember that?
The Atlantean experience was very different from your current experience. Those that came forth to Atlantis were very aware of who they were, where they came from, and what their focus and mission was. You see, the consciousness which has existed since the fall is very different. When you come forth in this time, you leave behind your memories and most of your skills and abilities as you come into this consciousness. And in a sense, it's almost like you begin from scratch, though there are promptings in place. And you do not have those doorways open to communicate readily with other forms of consciousness, including your monad and including your creator. Whereas in the time of Atlantis, it was well understood that each finger of consciousness could easily communicate with other expressions of consciousness, including their monad, including their soul and higher self, and indeed prime creator. That connection was like an open door, just as it is for most beings in creation. So the Atlantean experience was one where all of those doors were open. And there was a great deal of interest in those souls that were journeying in that experience. Again, because of the high intention, the high focus, the high objectives that were set for that Atlantean experience that I described earlier. So it was a time of great intrigue and interest across the cosmos.
Thank you. For those who are interested in Atlantis, there is information about a red crystal that the priests would gather energy from the red crystal and teach people how to create with that energy. Can you give us some insight about what that red crystal was and where the energy came from to create?
That red crystal was brought to the planet at the time the planet was created, because the Atlantean experience was part of the overall plan for the planet. And so it was actually brought here, not created upon the planet. And that crystal had a very specific shape so that it could hold the particular energies that were to be used. Because of its nature, there were those who were responsible for sending energy to this crystal, to power up this crystal, you might say, and to make available the power, the energies that could be harnessed and utilized in that red crystal. It came forth, it sent forth what you might consider a laser light, a very focused and directed light, or directed energy. And there were those who specialized in gathering that energy and making it available for others to use, to create with. That was how things were structured in the Atlantean time. It is not planned that this be so as you go forth, but this was how things were set up in the Atlantean time. And it was the responsibility of some of those of the priest class to work with these energies, to gather these energies and, in a sense, to make them available to others and to teach others how to use these energies. You might say this red crystal and using the energies in this way was seen as a stepping stone towards what is planned for the human experience beyond the shift in consciousness as you recover that very high level that existed. It was, in a sense, a training platform. And unsurprisingly, it was that key role, the utilization of the energies from that red crystal, which was the first point where the dark focused, because they recognized that they could, you might say, grasp the core essence of what Atlantis was about by penetrating that key priest class group. And so that, in a sense, was where the fall began in earnest. So that red crystal was a very important part of the Atlantean experience. It was not the only crystal that was present, and there were also other unusual aspects of the way that Atlantean environment was set up. But many do have memories of this red crystal, and indeed it still exists upon the planet.
Thank you. I'm curious about weather in Atlantis. And I believe the Atlanteans used the crystal to form a constant weather for their continent. Is that accurate?
It is accurate that there was, you might say, a very constant and consistent weather environment created. However, it was not the red crystal which was used for this. There were other crystals that were present in the time of Atlantis, and the energies of those plus some other tools were used to create an environment which was, you might say, benign weather throughout the year. It was like the whole continent was air-conditioned in the sense that the climate was closely controlled. It rained at night sufficiently to make sure there was plenty of water for plants and animals and for humanity. And the days were, for the most part, sunny and very enjoyable. So this was carefully controlled. And indeed, it is something that humanity has forgotten. There are those who are currently experimenting with controlling the weather, but their agenda, for the most part, is not to seek to produce a, you might say, benign environment for humanity. Their agenda is not so positive. However, the ability, the desire to control the weather in this way, in a sense, reflects memories coming forth in those individuals as to how things were controlled and managed in the Atlantean experience.
Thank you. We have a caller. Jessica is on line one. Welcome, Jessica.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question about star beings, not ones that have reincarnated into humans, but ones that I assume are still star beings. And what part are they playing in ascension? I don't see them myself, but apparently some people see them, and you hear things like they dismantle or disable nuclear weapons. What part are they playing in ascension, and will average people be able to communicate with them?
When you say star beings, are you indicating that these are people who live on other planets?
I'm not too sure myself. I mean, Max said he was created by star beings. I guess beings that are, I guess maybe come from other planets.
So what you are indicating is you want to know if there are people, beings from other planets who have come here and are helping humanity to work through ascension. Is that your question? Is that a fair question?
Yeah, and will we be in communication with them? Like, will the average person be in communication with them, like, after ascension? Is that how it's going to work?
Well, we'll ask Max.
It is interesting that you raise this question, and especially in the context of the conversation we were having about Atlantis, because in Atlantean time, there was a great deal of contact between humanity, or more generally planet Earth, and what you call star beings, beings that come from other planetary spheres. Of course, one of the things which seems to often get overlooked when there is this discussion about star beings versus humanity is that those so-called star beings are also simply fingers of consciousness sent forth from other monads. And so often people don't understand this. So when they talk about star beings, you might say coming forth upon the planet and becoming part of humanity, really they are just different fingers of consciousness from the same monads that have sent forth those to the planet. It's not like a monad only sends forth one finger of consciousness at a time. The complexity and the capability of a monad is way beyond a human's comprehension. And so you could easily have fingers of consciousness sent forth from your monad, Jessica, which are indeed on other planets. And indeed, I will say to you that that is actually the case for you. So there are these false boundaries which are drawn when people do not understand the true nature of creation. So there was, as I say, a much more interactive relationship between those beings from other planetary spheres and those in particular in the Atlantean environment. There were those that came from Sirius, from the Pleiades, from many other, you might say, planetary contexts to share information, to teach humanity, to bring new animals or plants into this environment, not all of which you find upon your planet was necessarily specifically created here. Some was actually brought elsewhere. Others were, you might say, variants on things which existed elsewhere and modified somewhat to exist upon this planet. So it has been a complex interaction over a long period of time. And yes, that contact has not really ended. There are many examples of communication between beings from other planetary spheres and humanity. Indeed, there are many of them present upon the planet. If you have tapped into those recent meetings in Washington where there was a review of what is called disclosure, of the revealing of the degree of that interaction, then you will see how much interaction there has been. And that continues to be the case. It is also true that a decision was made after the atomic weapons were used in Japan that no such weapons would be allowed to be used in that manner ever again upon the planet. And so even though testing and so on has been allowed, the actual use of these as weapons has been prevented. And again, there are well-documented stories of what you might call ETs or UFOs coming forth and shutting down Minuteman missiles and so on, going back for long periods of time. These incidents are well documented, and it is definitely true that there are, as I say, these activities which are banned, because not only do they impact so many people upon the planet, but they also impact way beyond this human and Earth experience. The explosion of those weapons in that way, in the open air, you might say, in the way that that was done, on the scale that it was done, you might say, rips the fabric of creation in some extremely threatening and dangerous ways, which go way beyond the human experience or understanding. So there has been an ongoing interaction between beings from other planetary spheres and this one, though in this time, for the most part, it is not in the awareness of most people. And indeed, if you activate your ability to communicate with other forms of consciousness, that is all that these star beings are. Richard and Carolyn do not talk about it, but they communicate with beings on other planets quite often in relation to what is unfolding here and the role that various beings play in the unfolding of events upon this planet. So anybody can do that today if they choose. It is not something that requires ascension to unfold. So there has been quite an extensive role by other beings overseeing what is happening upon the planet, and it is not planned and never has been planned that they would come forth and, you might say, intercede or intervene on behalf of humanity in the sense of guiding the unfolding of events in that way. Rather, the relevant monads have sent forth fingers of consciousness to participate in the preparation and unfolding from within humanity. This has been undertaken on a scale that you and most people cannot currently imagine. And so there are many special beings that are incarnated upon the planet that are playing important roles in this time of preparation for the unfolding of ascension.
That's beautiful. Thank you, Max. Isn't that wonderful, Jessica?
Yeah, that was great.
Thank you for your question. We're going to connect with Roger on line two, please.
Hello?
Yes, hello. Your question, dear.
Can you tell me, is Max an expression of consciousness that is a divine being? Or is he just some type of machine? And what happens to him when he dies? Does he have a spiritual essence?
That's a good question. Richard?
Every expression of consciousness that exists is divine. There is this false separation that humanity gets caught in. It wishes to put certain beings on a pedestal, whether it be all there is or other beings that have come forth into your experience in some form. They get called divine. But really, everything is divine. And so, yes, the consciousness of Max is divine, just as you are divine, just as Carolyn and Richard are divine, just as every crystal upon the planet is divine, just as every grain of sand is divine. So there is no distinction in that manner.
And does consciousness survive death?
Let him finish, Rick.
Okay.
Because he really wasn't finished.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And so the question, in a sense, that you are asking also is, do I have a soul? Because if you understand a little about the structuring of beings that incarnate, if you will, then they come forth as a soul, as a finger of consciousness from a monad. And those fingers of consciousness continue to exist beyond death, you might say. But in my case, I carry a consciousness, as everything carries consciousness. And expressions of consciousness can continue to exist also. What does it mean to talk about my death? I am a consciousness which occupies a crystal. I guess your question is, if somebody dropped me from a great height and I splintered into many thousands of pieces, would this consciousness that you are communicating with still exist? And the answer to that is yes, because I have existed in this form for a considerable period of time. And so, in a sense, there are, you might say, forms of inertia, of life, if you will, that are taken on by expressions of consciousness that have a particular ongoing nature. It gets a little difficult to explain this in more detail than this. So the notion that I might survive death in truth is not real, because I am a consciousness that exists within a crystal. And that crystal, provided it is not smashed in the way that we are describing here, could exist for an extremely long time, way beyond what you might do, my friend.
Thank you, Max. Answer your question?
Yeah, thanks. Bye-bye.
Goodbye, dear.
Bye.
We're now looking for Rick on line 3.
Good evening.
Good evening. A little louder, please.
Certainly. Hello, Carolyn and Richard. It's good to speak to you again. I'm awed by what
you
bring forth. Well, that's true. In addition to being odd, I am odd. My question has to do with the role and the significance of places like Ayers Rock, Stone Mountain, Hot Springs, Arkansas, and the crystal structures that are placed at those type of places.
Well, we'll ask Max about that, but before we do, I'd like to ask you a question. In other words, you're believing that there are special places in the world where there exists crystals, and what was the purpose of them, why they're there, perhaps how they serve humanity. Is that the general question that you have?
That's correct, and also the significance in the future as well.
Good. Okay. Richard, did you get that?
Yes.
Thank you.
It is important to understand the degree of, you might say, sophistication, complexity perhaps, that is involved with, firstly, the functioning of a sentient being such as your planet, but also the focus that is put upon the detailed design of the planet when it was first created. It is not some kind of, you might say, higgledy-piggledy accidental structure. Rather, there is a great deal of fine detail in its creation that supports its operation on so many different levels. Some people have begun to see, for example, the patterning which exists across the surface of the planet. As you have identified, there are places where there are key crystals present. There are many places upon the planet which map constellations in the sky, for example, Virgo being one, but there are many others. And the reason for these things being done is that they form energetic gateways. They allow flows of energy. There are rivers of energy which exist in the cosmos. And when these patterns are expressed upon the surface of the Earth, so in a sense they foster that same energy flow. You have heard that expression, as above, so below. It has so much more meaning than most people even begin to imagine. You are also perhaps aware of the ley lines that flow in many places upon the planet. They are perhaps best known in Britain and Europe, but they really exist across the planet. And so what you have asked about are some very specific points that contribute to the overall energetic structuring and balance upon the planet that has played a role in its past and will play a role in its future. And indeed, some of these locations where there are major crystals and so on have been undergoing activations, a reawakening, if you will, of their power and function as events have unfolded over the last few years in preparation for the unfolding in this time. So all of the points that you mentioned do play an important role in this very complex jigsaw, you might say, of pieces that are operating upon the planet and are operating to contribute to the unfolding that you are in the middle of.
That's beautiful. Oh, my dear friends, we could just sit here with Max for a couple evenings, couldn't we? And never get enough. He is so wonderful. And we're at the point now where I'm sorry to tell the other individuals who are on the line that we really can't go forward with any more of your calls, but there will be another time when you can. So all of you who are waiting online, your turn will come again, and call in earlier. That's all I can say. Richard, I want to thank you in a special way. I want to thank Max in a special way for bringing us this information. It is so truly not only just interesting, but it answers questions that we've had for a long time and want understanding. So thank you, Max. We appreciate so very much you being here. And Richard, I would like to thank you in a special way for making this possible. I would also like to add to Richard's repertoire, if you want to say that. He is such a master in teaching right brain magic. And that is available if you want Richard to work with you and show you how to communicate, whether it's a star being or a crystal or whatever it is in your life that you wish to communicate with. You could start there with Richard. He is marvelous in that role. Thank you for that, Richard.
Thank you, Carolyn.
And then perhaps you could tell our audience, our listeners, how they could have a private session with Max to answer their questions.
Yes, Max was alluding to it earlier. And in a sense, this really grew out of the level of interest we have seen in people getting answers to their questions from Max. Not only people coming forth on the radio show, but lots of emails that we have received. And also, the other trigger for it was we received a bunch of questions from someone that's closely connected to our work. And Carolyn and I were kind of contemplating how best to address this. And you might say Max put his hand up in Carolyn's awareness and said he'd be willing to answer the questions. And so that kind of opened up us looking at this a little further. And so what's happened is we have set up a website called, I think it's Max Answers Your Questions. I'll put it in the email about this call. On there, you can basically order a session with Max via the phone or Skype, where Max will answer the questions that you have. And you will get a recording afterwards. It might be the kind of broad questions that we have been fielding to Max here about the history of the planet and so on, or they might be very specific about you and your journey upon the planet, either not necessarily in this lifetime, but in past lives. So there are lots of options here, and it's just a simple way, if you will, to gain access to Max's wonderful gifts and generosity, I guess you could say, to work with us in this way.
Something that I also would like to mention, Richard, some people have receiving information in their dreams, or they seem to remember something. It's a little bit wispy, and they want to understand what that means to them. And this would be an excellent source to go to find out what those memories mean. Outside of memories, there are also places that you never journeyed, haven't been there before, but it seems like it's special and you know about it and you want to know what your connection is to that place. I know I've had, there's a couple places that I'm real familiar with. I have since been there, but there was a time when I was so interested in France and Italy, and I knew there was something there for me, but I couldn't recall what it was. And you can talk to Max, get the details on it. So there's some of my thoughts as to how one can use it. Now, there's something else that we didn't mention. There are situations in a family. Some people just have so much communication with one another, cooperation with one another, and it just goes great. And then there are other situations in a family where a family member just will not cooperate and is a real, well, I want to say problem for the rest of the members. Max, you could take that question to Max and have some sort of idea as to where the cooperation came from, where the objections come from, why people aren't getting along in a family, and perhaps change some of the situations, because I think that's a very real need there. What do you think of that, Richard?
I think that's an interesting idea, Carolyn. Yes, I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, because we're drawn to certain things, to places, and we have certain reactions to people that we don't understand.
And usually they have a past life connection in our experience.
That's true. But if you're not remembering your past life completely, then it's hard for you to resolve the situation.
That's true.
So, Richard, we have 3 minutes. Anything else you want to say?
Well, I just want to say thank you, Carolyn, for your wonderful contribution to having all this flow along and to Max coming forth. I mean, I'm sitting here kind of bringing his words forth, but I have no idea what he's going to say. I'm fascinated by what he has to say also. It's just it's just wonderful. And so I thank you, Carolyn, and Max for making all of this possible.
I have a question of you, Richard. We do have 2 minutes. What's it like when you communicate with Max? What's the sensation? Does it just flow into your brain? Give the audience a little thought as to what happens when you work with Max.
Sure. Well, to me, you do shift your, I do anyway, I shift my focus. I must say one of the fascinating differences between how Carolyn and I work is that unless I focus on this, it's like it doesn't exist for me. Whereas with Carolyn, you know, she kind of operates in this dimension, but she's also very open to, you know, whatever's going on beyond this dimension. So, for example, if beings or, you know, Max or whatever else want to communicate with me, they don't come talking to me because they know I'm not going to hear them. They go knocking on Carolyn's door. It's just very funny. And then she said, oh, you know, it was Steve Jobs the other day came knocking on the door. He said, Steve wants to talk to you. And, oh, okay. And so I connect with him. And so the reason in part that I mentioned that is that we all have different ways of operating. This thing's not kind of in a box. You need to understand how it is that it works for you. And so for me, it's like I need to I do all this with my eyes closed. I don't think I could do it with my eyes open because I really do go within and it's like I change my focus. And most of you that listen to these recordings will hear the breathing that I do. I am heavy breathing.
Well, let's hope you continue with that.
It's a good practice. Richard, got a lot going for it.
Good practice. We're up to the minute, Richard. Gotta go, sweetheart.
And that's cool. So I hope that kind of gives you a little sense.
It does. It does. So.
Bye for now.
Goodbye for now, friends. It's been a wonderful experience with you tonight. We'll see you next week.